Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 107 with Jeff Zoll and Jimmy Casas. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Jeff Zoll and Jimmy Casas, we explore a number of interesting topics like the best gift you can give is your time and the importance of gift giving in taking care of people. Do you know what the daily five is? And why it's important to make a commitment to celebration. I have to admit, I was starstruck in this episode, even though I've interviewed Jeff Zoll before and I've been around him and Jimmy Casas at What Great Educators Do Differently, but they bring so much value to this episode. So excited you're here to listen to it. Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into this episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose venture is a social enterprise, and their vision is to catalyze sustainable change in our society, one organization at a time. Learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend, and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Dr. Jeffrey Zoll is a lifelong teacher, learner, and leader. During Jeff's distinguished career in education, he has served in a variety of roles, most recently as Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning with Deerfield Public Schools District 109 in Deerfield, Illinois. Jeff also served as a teacher and coach in the state of Georgia for many years before moving into school administration. Zoll has also taught graduate courses at the university level in the areas of assessment, research, and program evaluation. He is the author and co-author of many books, including What Connected Educators Do Differently, Start Right Now, Teach and Lead for Excellence, Improving Your School One Week at a Time, and Leading Professional Learning, Tools to Connect and Empower Teachers. Jeff has earned several degrees, including his undergrad degree from the University of Massachusetts and his doctoral degree from the University of Alabama. He has also been recognized for his work as an educational leader on numerous occasions, including the 2014 BAMI Educators Voice Award. In his spare time, Jeff enjoys running and has completed over a dozen marathons. Zoll resides in Evanston, Illinois. Jimmy Casas recently completed his 22nd year in education leadership, the last 14 years as principal of Bettendorf High School in Iowa. Jimmy was named the 2012 Iowa Secondary Principal of the Year and was selected as one of three finalists for NASSP 2013 National Secondary Principal of the Year. In 2014, Jimmy was invited to the White House to speak on the Future Ready Schools Pledge. He's the co-founder of EdCamp Iowa and also the co-founder of Iowa EdChat, an online discussion chat that takes place every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Jimmy is the co-author of two popular educational books with Todd Whitaker and Jeff Zoll, entitled What Connected Educators Do Differently and Start Right Now, Teach and Lead for Excellence. Jimmy currently serves as a senior fellow for the International Center for Leadership in Education and also serves as an adjunct professor for Drake University, teaching a graduate course on ed leadership. Well, hey, Better Leaders, I'm so excited to connect again with Jeff, episode number two. And Jimmy, this is your first time on the show. Thanks for coming by today, guys.
Appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity, Daniel.
Appreciate the opportunity.
So, you know, one of the things that I'd love to hear from both of you, and Jeff, maybe you could start off and Jimmy finish it. You know, you have this beautiful organization that's been serving a lot of school leaders across the nation, across the world. What Great Educators Do Differently. And I don't know the whole story of how that started. I know you guys have collaborated on some books together as well. But can you pull the curtain back and give us some insights on how this all started?
Yeah. So, Daniel, we, you know, it might even be worthwhile just to share the story of how Jimmy and I go back, because it's not all long ago. And that happened, like a lot of relationships, the same way I met you, frankly, through Twitter. But it was funny that Jimmy and I were living approximately 3 miles from each other across the Mississippi River. He was in Bettendorf and I was in Rock Island, Illinois. And for about 6 months, I was living 3 miles from the guy. I didn't even know who he was. And this was, I think, 2012. And then another Twitter friend of mine, Nancy Blair, was coming to work in my school district to help out with some PD. And she said, "Jeff, I'm going to come a day early. I got to meet this guy named Jimmy Casas." And I'd never heard of Jimmy Casas at that time. I wasn't even following him on Twitter. And but anyway, he invited, unbeknownst to me, Nancy to come visit his school on a Sunday morning and invited her for a long tour of Bettendorf High School and then out to breakfast. And Nancy said, "Why don't you come along?" And I said, "You know, Nancy, I'm just too busy. We've got this PD day tomorrow. Why don't you go do it and I'll catch up with you later?" But she was persistent. And I finally, you'd be surprised, Danny, how reluctant I was to go see this guy on that Sunday morning because I was so busy. Right. And then I immediately met him and was, you know, I hate to say anything real nice about him while he's listening, but I guess I'll have to today. You know, I was just amazed by the school he had created, and you could feel it on a Sunday morning, frankly, with very few people in the building besides the three of us. And afterwards, he took us out to breakfast, and I remember thinking, here's this guy who had never met me, and he took, gosh, at that point, probably 3-4 hours out of his day to show us around his school that he was so proud of, and rightly so, and then to treat us to breakfast to boot. And so that was the starting point for a lot of things. One thing led to another, and I only lived there for 6 more months, but then we spent as much time as we could kind of collaborating then, independently on some stuff. And the next thing you know, about a year after that, we decided to write a book together, and we enlisted our buddy Todd Whitaker, and we used Todd's theme of differently, and we started What Connected Educators Do Differently. And then just like everything else, that led to the next thing. You know, Jimmy and I, you know, had, I don't know, Todd is probably a hero of ours from way back when. I go back 15 years with him, and I'd always wanted to do some conferences with him. And we kind of hatched this idea of What Great Educators Do Differently to encompass Todd's books and our book together. And we tried to just give it a shot. And our first one was in Chicago. We tried to keep it kind of close to home, and we didn't know what we were doing, but it worked really, really well. And we had some amazing speakers there. But more importantly, we had some amazing attendees there, a good mix of teachers and school administrators. And we just knew we'd try one and see how that went, and seemed to work. So we're up to number 6 now coming up, and it's just been a real exciting thing. But that's kind of a long story to answer your question, Jimmy. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think that was exactly how it happened. And when Jeff tells that story, I kind of chuckle a little bit because I can actually see Jeff saying, "Hey, you know," because I know one of the things he's really proud of is when you're organizing an event, you just want everything to go just right. And I think, you know, I could already see him saying, "No, I need to stay back and make sure everything's ready to go for this conference that they were going to host there." So, but I'm really glad he came, because it is interesting as you look back and think, you know, what happens if he never comes? And we certainly don't meet. We certainly don't have that interaction. We don't have that relationship, and who knows where we're at today. So just feel very, very blessed in that regard.
You know, Jimmy, I'm reading this book right now called Giftology, and it's really about how to treat people well through, you know, taking care of them, honestly, through gifts. In a lot of ways, bringing out the group that visited your school with Jeff to breakfast is a great example of that. And it sowed some seeds that, you know, grew into a really wonderful relationship that y'all have now. Where did you learn, or how did you develop that skill of taking care of people through gifts or service or, you know, meals and that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I've, you know, certainly, you know, I have to give that credit to my parents who certainly modeled that to all of us growing up. And I often share with people that my parents were migrant workers, not necessarily educated, not formally anyway. And just the fact of, as we were growing up and we were kids, they were very involved in the church. And certainly didn't have a lot of money. We weren't poor by any means, but we certainly weren't, you know, very well off. And so I know when we were younger, our parents certainly modeled that for us all the time. I always share with people that my father had, well, both of them actually, but my father certainly had a tremendous work ethic and certainly modeled that to us kids when we were younger. And we all loved to work. I mean, that was one of the things that we were very passionate about. In fact, they would often say, make hard work your passion, because that way, regardless of what you choose as a career, you'll be successful if you have the work ethic that it takes. And from my mother's standpoint, for her, it was really the sense of building community and how to do that. And she did that because even to this day, even though she's in her, you know, mid-70s now, she just loves to cook for people, right? That's where she finds her joy. She loves to bring people together and bring to gather and fellowship, I guess. And some of the best relationships and conversations and people that we've got to know has always come over some sort of meal. So it's just a great way to get to connect with people. But even as a young age, my parents would dabble in different things. My father, as I said, my parents were migrant workers, but then my father took his first job as a custodian in the high school and in the community that we live in. And from there, he just took several different jobs. But it was interesting because he kind of modeled risk-taking, right, even for us at that time, because he would jump from one job to another job to another job, always trying to, provide a better life for us kids. And then they would dabble in crazy things like my parents took on a movie theater, right? So we would travel about 45 minutes to a different community when we were kids. And my parents ran a movie theater for about 6 or 7 years. And then they opened up a restaurant and they did that for another 8 years. And so they were always putting us boys to work and modeling that importance of building community. And I think the most important thing is just watching them all the time was how much they gave of themselves. And so one of the things I always took from that is I think there's no better gift that you can give others than the gift of your own personal time. Mm. And I think there's nothing more important than that. So I feel blessed that I had parents that modeled that to us as kids. And I certainly give them all the credit for that.
And so that's interesting. You're talking about breakfast, the movie theaters. That's a really creative and interesting story that, I never would have guessed that, but it taught you so many things in terms of hard work. And I think what you said was making, passion sort of like your focus in terms of a job. And here you are, taking care of people. I'm curious if there's any other ways, talked about time, all this kind of stuff, but if there's a principal listening right now, is there anything you could surprise us with that maybe they have never thought of taking care of people in this way, but you just sort of do it naturally? Do you have any type of tip like that you could share with the listeners?
Well, I think the most important thing is, let me see if I can say it this way. So, there's so many stories that come out of that, right, with your parents. And I think we all have those stories, right, growing up and emulating our parents and wanting to be like our parents. And whether that's our parents, our siblings, our uncles, our aunts, family members, or just friends or whoever those mentors are. But a couple of things I would say is, number one is, one of the things my father also taught me was that, when you walk into a room, your responsibility or your goal should be when you leave that room to leave that room with more energy than when you walked in. And that's another thing I always remembered. And that was his way of saying, hey, when you be noticeable, right? Be memorable. And I think those things were important to them. And I think part of the reason is just from a cultural standpoint, back, you have to remember, they grew up, they're people who grew up in the 40s and 50s, right? When the same types of movements were going on for Latinos all across America. And so to them, it was important to be noticed and not be forgotten and to help people recognize that, the Latino population at that time could go on to do great things too, just like everybody else. And so that was just their kind of mindset and their mentality. So, but when it comes to, in schools and staff and working with people and so forth, I still think it's the biggest gift we can give is people of our personal time, but just to be invested in people and to spend time and to make people feel like when they walk away that they're like the most important person. And so how do you do that? By giving your complete and divided attention, being sincere in your conversation, being a good listener. And then most importantly is the follow through. I think that's the biggest piece. It's one thing to make an initial contact or to be around people initially, but what's the follow-up look like? And I think that's the important thing when we talk about, how do you change culture? You change it, one conversation at a time, followed by another conversation, followed by intentional follow-ups. And so those are the things I always try to do. In other words, trying to model what we expect others to do. And so if we're going to ask people to do, to build culture and to invest in kids and to make relationships the most important thing, then the question at the end of the day is, are we modeling that ourselves? So I think that's probably the biggest thing is just always modeling. And so I always share is, what we model is what we get. And so it's our responsibility to model the behaviors that we want to see repeated. So, but as far as one thing I would say, and And George just reminded me this of the other day. I don't know if you know George Kuros, but it was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I actually got the idea from Jeff, and I got the idea from my HR director at the time of different ways of how to connect with your staff and how to do different things for them. And so I had taken some of their ideas and just kind of tweaked it a little bit. And so one thing I did about 3 years ago for the first time is I contacted the parents of my teachers.
Yes.
And just to say to them, hey, I just want to tell you that it's just such a joy and an honor having your, whether it was their son or their daughter, in the school teaching. And I wish that you could see your son teaching and the impact that they have on kids. And that is a tribute to you as parents and how you raise them. And we are just so very, very proud of him. And I wish, you know, you could see what I see every day in the classroom and the impact that your son is making. And it's really interesting listening to the parents' reaction, right? Because it doesn't really make a difference whether your parents are 40 years old or 80 years old. You'll always be their little boy, or you'll always be their baby girl. And, you know, oftentimes when I did that, the parents would either cry or, you know, you can almost sense the hesitation, like, why is he calling me? Like, like a flashback, right? Like, you know, a couple of times I remember saying, like, I have a feeling like you got a lot of calls about your son when he was little, right? So, because that anxiety comes back, like, oh my God, he's in trouble, right? No, he's not in trouble. I'm actually calling you to share really good news about your son or daughter. But yeah, it was honestly, it was really cool to listen to the parents' reaction, how thankful and grateful they were. And so, and then when, of course, when the staff would find out that I had called their parents, that was very touching for them as well. So it was something that I really enjoyed doing. And I wish I would have thought of it 20 years ago, but it was certainly fun for the dozens of calls that I made during the last 3 years. It's pretty cool.
I love that. Could you stay there one more second and just unpack it? How did you get the numbers of the parents, you know, so that you could call them?
Yep, you have to try everything you possibly can. Number one, I went to the nurse and went to the emergency contact information, right? That's the first thing I did to try to get emergency contact information. And if they listed their parents, that was great. And if they didn't, then I would either go to a spouse or a significant other or whatever happened to be the case. And then I would contact them and say, hey, I'm reaching out to you in confidence because I want to do something for your wife or your husband or your son. And if I had an older staff member who, you know, just because either I knew them or other people had shared with me, let's just say their parents weren't living, then perhaps I might call their eldest daughter or their oldest child, right? And share with them, hey, you know, I'm so proud of your mother and I wish you could see her, you know, the same kind of conversation, but just, you know, adjust it to whatever, you know, whoever I was calling. So, and the good thing was, in all the times that I did it, no one ever knew it was coming. And so either the spouses or the parents or somebody did a great job of keeping that secret. And so, and I remember when I would see them at the next event or they would be at the school, that's the first thing they would say when they'd come up to me is just tell me how cool that was and how much they really appreciated that.
Yeah, that's a really neat tactic. I've heard about that, about you specifically. And so I love that the listeners can hear firsthand, you know, how you went about doing that as well. So much good stuff. The ideas of being noticeable, being memorable, just different ways to connect with the staff there.
Hey, Danny. And Danny, if you don't mind, I just want to share one more thing and then I'm going to let Jeff talk here for a little bit. But I think that kind of goes back to what I just shared a little bit ago about how important it is to model the behaviors you want to see repeated. So, you know, when that happened and those teachers saw that the reaction of their parents by receiving a positive phone call, that again motivates and inspires them to say, well, what if I did that same thing with the students in my classroom?
Yep.
And look at the way my parents responded. So why wouldn't I want the kids in my classroom, their parents, you know, having that same feeling of joyfulness and just, you know, just pride. So I think that's an example of when you begin to think about leadership, what are we doing as leaders to model that same type of behavior that we just want others to emulate in ways that really build a culture to just takes it to another level, that it's just a place that everybody wants to be a part of, right? It's like Cheers, right? The old show Cheers, right? So anyway, so that's something that, you know, as I matured in my role as a leader, that I began to think in different ways about what leadership really was about, what it meant, and how you emulated those things, or I'm sorry, modeled those things for others to want to emulate.
Now, I stole that stuff from you guys too, just seeing how you start off your conferences with the music and high fives and getting to know people. That connects to that. What you, when you walk into a room, do you leave it with more energy, right? And you modeled that for me, so thank you. And I stole that and brought it back to the staff, and they loved it. So just great, great tips, great people to be around. I definitely am inspired by both of you. And Jeff, you know, just curious, what were some little things that you did or big things that you did that inspired cultural change or ways you took care of people that you could share with the listeners?
You know, Danny, one thing that I think of, I would really echo a lot of what Jimmy just said, and specifically on visibility and listening. Our very, very best teachers, and frankly, all the teachers in the building are doing the very, very best. And they kind of appreciate it, I think, when you come into their classroom and you acknowledge the work they're doing. So simply being visible in classrooms each and every day, I found that the teachers I worked with when I was a school principal really, really appreciated that. And we all say it's important, but not everybody does it. And I just made it a priority. There's, you know, there's five or six different ways. I know the principals who do this well do it. They do it first thing in the morning, or they make a list of five classrooms every day they're going to go to, and they call that their daily five. You know, you've heard of the daily five program, but their daily five is visiting five classrooms for 5 minutes. And good teachers really appreciate that. And if you do have a couple of teachers who are maybe, you know, underperforming, they probably don't like that. And I, as a principal, quite honestly, to be frank, you know, when I do something that the great teachers like and my one or two not so great teachers don't like, I'm going to keep doing that. I want to honor my very, very best people. And part of the way you honor them is simply by being visible in their classrooms and showing them that that's important to you as well. And the other thing is listening. I think too often as principals, we feel like we have to do the talking. And on a show like this, Jimmy and I certainly like to talk a lot. But to be honest with you, when I'm meeting with other principals now in a coaching role, or when I was a principal listening to teachers, I did very little of the talking. And I did 80% of the listening, the truly active listening. And oftentimes people would leave those meetings and just be very thankful for how I'd helped them. And I would kind of smile to myself thinking, I don't know that I said a word the entire meeting. And but that's powerful. And we need, and I think a lot of successful leaders need to remind themselves of that, because we all like to talk and we do think we have a lot of answers. And I think I have a lot of answers, quite frankly. But when a teacher comes to me with a problem, the very first thing I need to do is listen, listen, and listen. So the other thing I would say, though, is so important is celebration. One school where I served as principal, Danny, you know, 1 year we came up with five faculty value statements. And we started those statements off with two powerful words: we will. And we kind of had like three or four faculty meetings to kind of debate what our five we will statements would be. And we finally honed them down to five, and we wordsmithed them and tweaked them. And we came up with five, and four of them were kind of nuts and bolts, you know, our core business. I think the first one was we will promote and insist on a safe and orderly learning environment. We had a second we will statement that said something like, we will design and deliver meaningful and relevant lessons on a daily basis. But our fifth we will statement, it was, we will recognize and celebrate our many successes. And we only, I limited the staff kind of capriciously to five statements. And we decided as a staff that one of our five would be about celebration. And when we made that a commitment, we actually followed through on that commitment, and we celebrated everything: student, family, parent, community, school, individual teacher, teams of teachers, grade levels of teachers, departments. Whenever there was a celebration of any kind, personal, professional, but mainly things that were promoting the culture. If I saw an individual teacher doing something that promoted our culture, or a team of teachers, or grade level, we just had all these different intentional levels of celebration in place. And kind of like Jimmy was saying, we became known. I think there were eight middle schools in that district, and we pretty soon became known as the school that worked really hard but had a lot of fun. And before you knew it, we had teachers wanting to transfer to our school. Yeah. And part of that was just because of the culture of celebration we had, and just appreciating each other. Because this is a pretty darn hard job, you know, being a classroom teacher, being a school principal. And if you don't take time to have fun pretty regularly, it's going to wear you out after a while.
Can you think about, Jeff, some of the more meaningful ways you celebrated your people? Because, you know, we're definitely limited. A lot of schools are by our budgets. But that's not a reason why we can't get creative with how we honor folks. So I'm just curious. Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you something stupid I did today, and I can say this because it won't be on there until August, and this is still May as we're speaking. But today I went to observe a teacher just popped in a room, and I'm the assistant superintendent in the district. So it's kind of rare for people in my level to pop in classrooms, but I still try to do that all the time. And I went into this one math teacher's classroom about 9:30 in the morning, and she said, "Oh, you should come back at 11. We're doing some three-act math challenges," which is, you know, Dan Meyer three-act math challenges. And we've been really pushing these sixth grade math teachers to do more of that and less of traditional math drill and kill. And I was pretty busy today, and it was 9:30, as I say. And I said, "Well, she wants me to come back at 11 in the media center where they're doing this." So I came back at 11, and she and her colleague, the other sixth grade math teacher, sure enough, they had the classes together in the media center, and they were doing these three act math challenges. And they started with videotapes of the two of them that they had worked on all weekend. And they made a comment like, "Now, please forgive our acting. Neither one of us are very good actresses." And they had these 2-minute clips, and they're setting the scene up for their kids. And long story short, as soon as I got back to my office, I just went online to Amazon, and I searched Oscar statuettes, and I found a package of 12 Oscar statues for $11.
Yeah.
And I bought it, and so it's going to arrive Wednesday. And I'll just take that over there and say, "Hey, you guys are pretty good actresses. I thought you deserve an Oscar." I try to find ways, you know, it's not that hard, right? To try to find ways to celebrate people. If you stick around long enough and listen and watch long enough, something will happen during the course of the lesson where you'll say, "Hey, I want to give this to this person and recognize them in a small way." So that's something. But in this other school I was telling you about, we almost had things in place. They were quarterly, monthly, weekly, and would take too long to describe each one, but they were kind of rituals. They became part of the, you know, traditions and rituals of that school. But probably my favorite, if I just shared one, was our annual ritual of our Teacher Hall of Fame. And it was very professional looking, and it said Otwell Middle School Hall of Fame, and it was in a prominent wall of the school. And we certainly celebrated kids a lot, but we were also known as a school that celebrated teachers. We didn't sell our teachers short on the celebration thing. And our Hall of Fame was probably our most distinguished honor. And the first year we did it, we inducted two veteran teachers into it with the thought that every year thereafter, just to kind of wet the whistle, so to speak, but then every year thereafter, we inducted one additional teacher into the Hall of Fame. And that one actually had requirements, kind of like the Baseball Hall of Fame. You had to have been there so many years and this and that. And we'd always invite the family in. It was a big surprise ceremony, and the husband and wife would come in with the kids and parents, and there'd be a really, really fancy kind of photograph and plaque in this hallway. And it's kind of cool. And so that was one thing we really started that kind of took off, the Hall of Fame for teachers.
Wow, that's very cool. I love it. And the fact that you broke it down too, you know, in terms of annual and quarterly, and I think you might have said monthly, but to push the listeners to think about how can you make it a regular part of your culture, and then something that is also, you said, a ritual. So it really becomes ingrained, right? That this is who we are. We will celebrate people, and you live that out so nicely through those stories and what you did for your folks.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jimmy and I both talk quite a bit about the word culture, right? School culture. And you know, do we stop and really define that? And I think if you look it up anywhere, you're going to see, you know, the culture is the norms, attitudes, behaviors, beliefs, traditions, rituals, and celebrations that are present in a school that you can almost feel when you walk in the building. And to put it more, to take that down and sum it up even more, like Roland Barthes says, it's kind of the way we do things around here. But so those are my informal and formal definitions of culture. And I think a big part of that is the celebration, and to make those ritualistic embeds them into the culture more deeply.
Hey, Danny, if you don't mind me jumping in, you know,
please.
Jeff was sharing that story with the Oscars, that I can see Jeff doing that. And that's one thing that if I ever shared anything to other people, is he really is a giver. He's got a great heart. And I think, you know, the reason he's able to do those things, because he's thinking about other people in those moments and not about himself. And then yet wants people to experience those types of experiences that we all know are part of culture. So kudos to Jeff for doing that. Hey, I want to share a couple things. And again, I'll share this. Jeff didn't talk about this. Jeff also does this thing called two-a-days that he shared with me way back when I first met him. And I started doing that myself, where, you know, you start each day off with just writing a couple note cards to some of your staff members. And I took that idea from Jeff, and it was really interesting how that would happen, right? And I remember Jeff's always saying that the best part about that, two things are going to happen. The person that you wrote the card to or receives the card is going to feel really good about their day and feel very appreciated and valued. And we know that, right? People who feel valued and appreciated will always do more than what is expected, right? When you develop that type of culture. But the second person that's going to feel really good about it is you yourself, because you wrote the card, right? And so what a great way to start your day every day with that type of frame of mind that puts you in a really good place before the day even gets started, when you know you're doing something kind for somebody else. And so when he talked to me about that and I began to do that, I started thinking about what are other ways we could do such a thing, and how could we have others experience the same thing? And so started doing those at the beginning of faculty meetings. So when people would come together, we actually made note cards and just asked the staff, hey, if there's someone on the staff that you would like to recognize or just share a kind word, whether it be a paraprofessional or a custodian or a secretary or whoever happened to be, or someone in the district or someone in another building, now let's all do that together and let's model that. So we would actually take time during a faculty meeting to do that. And I still remember the first time we did this. I remember going into the main office, and you know, with the faculty meeting, it kind of wrapped up, and I had said my goodbyes to people as they were leaving. And then when I walked into the main office, both of my secretaries were crying, and I'm sitting here thinking that something just happened. I'm like, oh my God, you know, what just happened? But when I came around the corner and looked on their desk, they had these envelopes with these cards laid out on their desk. So they'd each received, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 of them, and they had read them. And so they're bawling because of what the staff had written about to them. So that was just really cool. And so then I expanded that into even starting off our department chair meetings the same way, right? Let's put everybody in a good frame of mind. Let's take a few minutes here just to write a kind word to somebody maybe in your department or a colleague. And so those were the ideas that I took from Jeff, and then again tried to expand them into a different arenas. And then the second example I want to give you, because I'm very proud of it, is something I started way back in Milwaukee Public Schools and then took with me to Iowa City and then ended up in Bettendorf, is a thing called the Students First Banquet. And I talked about it to other people who have now implemented it in their school. But basically, the bottom line is it's celebrating not only kids, but it's also celebrating teachers. And so the way it works is that as a staff, we would come together every year right after the holiday break. And working with the staff, we would identify anywhere between 15 to 20 kids who in our building, the teachers and the staff and the counselors together believed that had overcome some significant obstacles, right? Whether it be in attendance or behavior or academically or whatever happened to be the case. And we wanted to take kids and we really wanted to honor their perseverance, their grit, their ability to continue to move forward even when they were faced with such adversity and such obstacles. And so once we narrowed that down and we kept moving it down, we'd get our final list of 15 to 20 kids. Then we would call those kids in, we would congratulate them. And it was always really, really cool to see their expressions on their faces and so forth. But then we would follow that up with saying, hey, we understand and recognize that you're probably here because some adult played a significant role in helping you overcome those obstacles. And so, you know, what I'd like you to do now is think of that individual in the school. Who would be that individual if I asked you to name one person right now who you would want to honor, who was there for you, who supported you and guided you through these difficult times? And the kids would get really excited about that. And then I would ask them, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to write me one page, and I want you to explain why you selected that individual. And so the kids would write this up. And then we'd hold a really awesome banquet with a keynote speaker who was someone from the staff who had also, that we knew had overcome some significant obstacles, that could talk to the kids about that. We'd have them invite their parents, and we'd also invite the teacher on their behalf. And then we'd all have them sit together at the table with their families. And then the teachers also, the staff, I should say, had written something about the students. So we would then have a banquet, we would have a dinner, and then every kid would be recognized. And what would happen is we would read what the staff wrote about the students, and then we would take what the students wrote and read that out loud to everybody to hear. And it was always such an awesome celebratory night, just because, you know, now you've got the kids, you've got the teachers, and you've got the parents all crying. So it was a total tear fest. And so after the first year, I had to make sure that I bought boxes of Kleenexes to have on the tables, because it's just constantly everybody crying that night. But it was just such a moving night and such an inspirational night to bring our teachers and our kids together with their families and honor them. So it's, I still have teachers will tell me that's, you know, their favorite moment of the entire school year. It's almost as cool as graduation, but maybe not quite as important as graduation, but it was definitely pretty awesome.
Yeah, but you know, it leads up to that, and it sets the tone for appreciating the kids' effort to persevere and the way the adults have impacted the students as well. That's a beautiful story with Students' First Banquet. And oftentimes, you know, as leaders in the building, we could get caught up on the scores for assessments, standardized tests, all that state, you know, accountability, whatever it is. But it's these moments, the Student First Banquet, where a educator really connects with a kid and helps them navigate challenges and overcome them, that leads to the great results that we see in our schools. So I really appreciate you sharing that story.
Well, and the other thing is, Danny, too, is, you know, we often talk about how our communities and businesses and so forth, you know, they don't know what's going on in the schools, or perhaps the school board or whoever doesn't really quite recognize the issues that our kids are facing today. And like you said, you know, there's so much focus on standardized testing and so forth, but it's really about getting to know the kids. Well, we as leaders sometimes complain about that, right? We'll talk about, well, they don't understand. And, you know, I wish the community could see what we're dealing with and all these types of things that we come up with. But at the end of the day, that is the leader's responsibility to create those opportunities for the community to come in and be able to see those things that are happening. And so to invite the businesses and to invite the school board members and to invite central office and to hear these stories, it certainly changed their perception about, well, my God, I had no idea what you were dealing with on a daily basis as a school and as an organization, and how awesome for HR directors to be able to hear these awesome stories about teachers and how they're advocating for kids and these things that nobody really knows what's going on. Well, how do we create these opportunities for people to know what's happening in our schools? And so it is our responsibility to figure out ways to tell our story. And so that was one of the best things that would come out of that evening, is it would change people's perceptions and their attitudes about what we're dealing with on a daily basis. And quite frankly, walk out of there really, really proud of the work that we were doing.
Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, a social enterprise with a vision to catalyze sustainable change in our society, one organization at a time. I know one of their leaders, AJ DeLeon, and I worked with him in Chicago. He is a data whiz, and if you're looking for that kind of help, I strongly encourage you to reach out at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls, there's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com.
I want to get and touch base on that idea of being proud. But in just a second, I can't let the listeners miss this, but you know, you guys are getting the best ideas in terms of how to run a school. And if you're not taking notes, like you need to. I would implement all this stuff tomorrow if I was running a school, because this is really, you know, firing me up in terms of school leadership. But did you hear how Jeff and Jimmy talk about making things intentional within staff meetings, right? And starting the day off with writing thank you letters and gratitude notes to the staff. Like, you protect the time for that. You build it into your people. Is again, the modeling, being noticeable, being memorable, and creating this energy that you want to see within your building. Do that in your meetings. Start your meetings off that way. Like I said, just the value you guys are bringing today, I really appreciate it. I know the listeners are going to go bananas and probably listen to this show 4 or 5 times, I'm guessing. So it's great. But going back to the idea of being proud, Jeff, with what great educators do differently, you guys have been running that for a little bit now. What have you been most proud of by adding this to the education community?
You know, Jimmy and I tend to at the end of each one of these conferences, Danny, we tend to stand at the door of wherever we are, the auditorium or the gym or whatever it is, and we try to shake the hand of every single person who leaves the conference. And we don't do it because those are the kind of people we are, right? I just don't know that other people do that. But the one comment we get that I guess makes me honestly a little proud is the comment we get more than any other comment when we shake 300 hands or more as we're leaving the conference for the last time is, this is the best conference I've ever been to. And it makes you feel pretty good about the work we're trying to do. And again, that's not just Jimmy and I. Usually we're playing a lower key role, and we're empowering a lot of other amazing presenters and speakers to take the stage a little more than we are. But we do put a lot of work into making that happen. It's nice to hear that. When we drill down a little deeper to say, you know, why is this the best conference you've ever been to? Mm-hmm. It usually comes back to everybody who does present. And oftentimes we get some of the attendees to do mini presentations, Ignite sessions, or participate in EdCamp sessions that we kind of do in the day two of the conference. But it usually comes back to all of the presenters are people who are willing to truly connect, not just to get up on the stage. You know, it's the same thing we talk about in our classrooms. They're not there to be the sage on the stage. I mean, Todd Whitaker, George Koros, Tom Murray, Joe Sanfilippo, some of these people who present, LaVonna Roth, Aaron Klein, Pernille Rip, these are some of the smartest people in the business. But they're not up there. They're again, go back to Jimmy. They're modeling. Same thing we want in our classrooms. Instead of being the sage on the stage, sure, they're sharing their wisdom and their expertise, and they're up there part of the time. But more than that, they're actually wanting to connect with the attendees, not just there at the conference, but thereafter too. And so often we hear teachers and principals who are at these conferences say they reached out to Salome after the conference, and Salome got back in touch with them and helped them out. Or they reached out to LaVonna, or they called me, or they called Jimmy. And that's just a commitment we make to anybody who takes the time on a Friday and a Saturday to attend one of these conferences, that we will always be there 24/7, 365 days a year to lend an ear and help if we can. And so I'm kind of proud of that. And I'm proud, frankly, of my partner that, or I should say my partners, because this is an adventure between Todd and Jimmy and me, but the three of us all kind of made that commitment to ourselves. And it's great to work with two other gentlemen who have that mindset.
And Jimmy, same question to you. What have you been most proud of with launching What Great Educators Do Differently?
Yeah, I think just like anything else, first of all, I would definitely echo what Jeff said. And I think that's probably one of the things we're the most proud of, is just the fact that we're able to, you know, build these communities. And that's kind of what we talk about in leadership all the time. It's one thing that, you know, to build a community. And I think that is our role as leaders, is we are community builders. But to be able to build a community that never existed before, that's kind of having that vision, right? And so just feel very proud that, you know, just from, you know, two or three guys sitting around a table having dinner, talking about this crazy idea put on these conferences, and then actually watching it come to fruition is something we're really proud of. But I still, for me, it always comes back to just the meeting of the people and the connections you make and the relationships you build, and the, really the investment in others. And Jeff kind of touched on that, but I love the team that we have put together. We have utilized at least probably around 20 different people so far, and we have others that we would like to be able to utilize, and we're going to continue to build on that as our company progresses. But just the fact that they truly invest in other people, we have truly become a family. They are a joy to be around. And even after the conferences, we're still staying connected, whether it's through group text or Boxer or phone calls or whatever. But we've really become a family. And I just find that really heartwarming. And I just feel really, really proud of that, because at the end of the day, just like anything else, it's just like the work that we do. When this is all said and done, whenever that day comes, it'll be the relationships that you cultivated over time to have these people become more like family that is what we'll remember. And we've had already some really good times and laughter and some tears even, and just getting to know each other on a personal basis. But I think that's what I'm most proud of, is just being able to actually have an idea and a dream and actually have it come to a realization. And the fact that we're going to be having our sixth conference is pretty cool.
Oh, it's very cool. And I've attended the conference, listeners, and it's definitely a must conference. If you're an educator, you're serious about growing as a school leader and impacting your kids and your communities, you need to definitely set aside the time and invest in yourself by going to this conference. And Jimmy, can you tell us a little bit about the one that's coming up? I think it's in October in New York.
Yeah, so our next conference is going to be taking place in New York, in Finger Lakes, New York. It's at the Hobart Wesley Smith College, October 6th and 7th. So we're really excited about that. We have another tremendous lineup, as Jeff said. So it is a two-day conference. And so right now, registration is open. So if people are interested, we'd love to have them go and register and take part in that. And we're really, really excited about that. Right now, in terms of that lineup, I believe that lineup includes, again, that will be Todd Whitaker will certainly be there, and Salome Thomas L. and Lavana Roth and Pernille Ripp and Thomas Murray and Joe Mazza and Kayla Delzer and Weston Kieschnick. And so just another powerful lineup. I'm sure I probably left someone out, but we're excited about that. We're also right now currently in the works, Danny, putting some other ones on right now. We're looking at some new sites that we're going to hopefully be launching in 2018. So we're going to ask people to continue to check back to the website and see where those cities are going to pop up. And I think people are going to be really happy with the locations that we're trying to make happen right now. And we're excited about those opportunities too.
Yeah. Maybe you're coming out to Belgium.
Hey, there.
We thought about that, but it was more, if we come out there, it's going to be more about the waffles and the beer and the chocolate, as you said already, Danny.
All right. That's great. Hey, and listeners, you know that we always link up all these wonderful resources for you. So to definitely get your registration going and attend that conference in October in New York, just go to the show notes, click on the WGEDD website link, and you can get yourself all squared away there. I want to close with just a quick, you know, high-level summary of your books and why people should grab them. Normally, I ask people, you know, what book should every principal read right now? And you guys are authors. So, Jeff, in terms of what connected educators do differently, why should the listeners go out there and grab it if they haven't already?
Well, you know, because I think it'll change their lives if they become a connected educator, if they're not already, and if they already are a connected educator, I think it's a book that'll help them take that connectivity to the next level. We typically define a connected educator as just anyone who looks for other people, opportunities, or resources that they can use both within and outside of their own school district to make themselves better. And I think Jimmy and I would both say, and Todd would say too, that by becoming a connected educator through Twitter, we must become not only better educators, but honestly better human beings. And that's because of the amazing people I've met and have wanted to model myself after. So if you read the book, What Connected Educators Do Differently, I think you hear a lot of stories that will inspire you, stories of other teachers around the country, around the world, other principals around the country, around the world who have grown from that. And hopefully you'd learn a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And being connected will change your life. Jeff is not, you know, overstating that at all. That's why I'm able to serve so many school leaders myself, is because I just started hitting record, talking to people much smarter than me. And all of a sudden, I've been able to help out a lot of school leaders. And that's just because I'm connected. So check out that book. It'll be linked up in the show notes. And Jimmy, in terms of Start Right Now, why is that a book all our listeners should check out today?
Because Todd Whitaker and Jeff Zoll are amazing writers, and I just jumped on their coattails for a couple books. So, but in all seriousness, you know, that book truly is, it's based on really a leadership framework. And that leadership framework talks about knowing the way, showing the way, going the way, and growing each day. And really what the premise of it is, it's a book really for both teachers and leaders. And one of the things we talk about is how great teachers are great leaders and how great leaders are also great teachers. And so it's a book about taking your beliefs and how do you take those beliefs and change those into behaviors. So we're certainly modeling what it means to truly be a leader. And it isn't about being a principal. It's about being a leader and everything that you do every day in your life. So we're very proud of it and feel very blessed that that Dave Burgess Publishing agreed to publish that book for us. And we're excited because it's doing really well. And we've heard a lot of great feedback from people who have truly enjoyed the book. So feel very, very blessed. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and that framework is really wonderful. I saw you unpack a little bit of that at one of your conferences there in Missouri. And, you know, it's a wonderful way for school leaders to approach the work. And so I definitely want to highlight that book, and listeners, check it out. It's linked up for you in the show notes. The last question I want to ask you guys, if you could put any message on a school marquee across the globe, what would that message read?
You know, for me, I'm going to give you two answers there, Danny, because I've always got to throw out the last thing I almost always say whenever I'm presenting with Jimmy or Todd. And frankly, it's the first thing I tweet out every single morning. And that's this kind of corny saying, but to me, it's still what it's all about. Work hard, have fun, be nice today. And if we have a school or a school district or a school community in which every kid and every adult in that community is working hard, they're having fun, and they're being nice to each other each and every day, we've got a pretty darn good school community. And so we can talk a lot about a lot of esoteric things in education or a lot of buzzwords, but to me, my dad and my mom taught me those three things, and I would love to see work hard, have fun, be nice on a marquee. Another thing I kind of saw on a marquee, and I just saw this one time in a school and I was driving by, and I still kind of like it. It said, it was their motto, but it was kind of underneath their marquee. It said, making learning irresistible. And that's what we should do in our school for both our teachers and principals, the educators in the building, and also the kids in the building. Let's make learning irresistible. Let's get away from the boring Monday lessons. Let's still get high test scores. I have nothing against that, but let's do it through irresistible learning activities. And it kind of reminds me of Dave Burgess, who talks about what are those lessons that kids would actually pay to attend the lesson. Let's keep designing more and more of those and replicating those whenever we see them.
Well, Danny, this question is actually pretty easy for me because it was part of our marquee, and that was the whole idea of every day living our lives with a sense of passion, a sense of purpose, and a sense of pride. So definitely on that marquee would be lead with passion, live with purpose, and love with pride. It's your choice how you want to live each day. So go be the change our kids and our teachers deserve. So I appreciate you asking.
Absolutely. And that's great parting words of advice for the listeners. Listeners will also have Jeff and Jimmy's blogs linked up for you in the show notes and Twitter handles so you guys can connect. And Jeff and Jimmy, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast.
Daniel, thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Danny, thank you likewise. And we're very, very appreciative and feel very grateful for the opportunity. So thank you. And thank you for the listeners as well.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel, Jeff, and Jimmy. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type WGEDD for what great educators do differently. In the search bar, in the show notes page, will pop up. You get the highlights of today's episode and links to all the resources as well as the best way to connect. Well, thanks and appreciate listening. Bye-bye for now. Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across? Links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well. If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.